Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It is Thursday, October 12th, 2017. I'm punching my microphone, and I am here today to talk about week six of the NFL season. And joining me to do that is someone who I wanted to have on because his team of preference is, in fact, off to a very hot start this season. That is the New York Jets, and this is Chase Stewart of footballperspective.com. Chase, how are you?
I am doing fantastic, Bill. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I didn't know when I was going to be able to come on this year. I think you said after the Jets' third win, so I was a little nervous.
Well, it's come much quicker than I was expecting. I don't know about you. I mean, did you think the Jets were going to be this good as they've been so far through five games?
I don't know how good they are, but I think they – when we thought about them in the preseason – it was clear that the schedule was pretty easy in the front. I wrote about that a couple times, and that has come to fruition. I think Jacksonville's better than people thought, and Miami's been worse than people thought, but those were the games at the beginning of the year you kind of said, well, they might be able to win those games, and then the schedule gets pretty tough. So
yeah.
I think the floor has been raised on this team for sure, but other than that, I think there's still a lot of questions out there.
Yeah, I mean, the after the bye week, after week 11, they finished hosting Carolina and Kansas City. They're at Denver and New Orleans, hosting the Chargers, and then at the Patriots in week 17. So it's not the prettiest slate afterwards. They have the fifth, according to Football Outsiders, the fifth easiest schedule in football so far, and then the seventh toughest schedule in the league going forward. So you seem at least a little skeptical that this is the Jets' true talent level. I mean, is there, you know, what would surprise you the most about the Jets so far this season in terms of their performance?
Yeah, so I think that, and this probably is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, this is what happens when Jets fans talk, but it's that there's a real sense that this is a competently run team. There's not a bad area of the team. You know, in last year you saw Fitzpatrick go off the rails at times. You saw players running wide open in the secondary for big games. There were stretches on both offense and defense where the Jets just did not look like a competent professional football team, and that hasn't happened this year. So I think you have to give Todd Bowles credit. I think the purge of the veterans has been a positive, and Bowles is coaching younger players. They seem to be responding, and even if the talent level isn't great, the Jets appear better coached. There seems to be more effort. They're not making terrible mistakes that, you know, kill themselves. So I think against bad teams, they've got a chance to be successful, and we still have to see against good teams. I think so one thing that would surprise me is, and then I'll start off my trivia today for you. Bill, how many sacks do you think Leonard Williams and Muhammad Wilkerson have combined for this year?
Haven't heard a ton about them, so I'm assuming not a lot. I'm going to say, five games. Let's say three.
Well, I will tell you, all Jets defensive linemen have combined for zero sacks.
So that seems like they've combined for zero sacks, then.
It is not good. So
that
part is kind of surprising. The defense has played well, but and this is, at least particularly with Wilkerson, he has not played well. So it's not a case of sacks not telling the story. He has really been a non-factor for the entire season. And Leonard Williams, I think he's been double-teamed a lot, and I'm not going to say he's having, you know, a regressing year, but it's just he hasn't done much either. So the fact that the Jets are 3-2 with nothing from their two best defensive players is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, that does seem shocking. Williams has five hits so far this season, so he's getting to the quarterback a little bit. But Mo Wilkerson, zero sacks, zero hits, one tackle for loss, one pass knockdown in five games. That does not seem like it's what you're paying him a lot of money for, and certainly that's paying him a fair amount of money. Are you upset that I beat you to your offensive trivia question about the Jets?
You did, yeah. I was going to be ready for you. So my trivia question was going to be, which player leads the league in targets among players who have caught every target this year?
And it's Jeremy Curley, who's 17 for 17 so far this season. I tried to look it up before we were on the air. I just tweeted about it independently, I swear. And it was Pierre Thomas who finished the year 29 for 29, which was pretty remarkable. Even though he's a running back, you still think, okay, well, you have a pass that, you know, is bounced at your feet when they blow up a screen, or you have a pass bounce off your fingertips, it's slightly overthrown. I mean, 29 for 29 is incredible. I'd be intrigued to see if there's like, because like this is I'm just looking at season long totals. So I don't know if there's a guy who was 34 for 34 to start a year or in the middle of the season caught 34 passes in a row. Even 17 seems a little outlandish. It just seems like it'd be so hard to do that 17 times in a row, even on short passes.
Yeah, but you know, this kind of opens up the broader question of what, as a, if one was to be a Jets fan, what are they looking for out of the team this year? And I think, in some ways, that the start is maybe not ideal in that if you wanted to see one of the young quarterbacks play, well, McCown's playing well enough to certainly not lose the job, and that's kind of a, you know, that may not be a good thing, right? So I, at this point, until there's an injury, which he has a lengthy injury history, I don't know if the Jets are going to play one of their young quarterbacks, and I think that is a bad thing for the franchise overall because Josh McCown is very unlikely to ever start a meaningful game for the Jets. Yeah, unless there's a shocking playoff run this year, he's probably not going to be the quarterback next year, and if he is the quarterback next year, he's probably not going to start a meaningful game then. So as a 38-year-old quarterback, I don't know how much Jets fans want to see him. And the same thing with Jeremy Curley. The Jets have a lot of young receivers that probably are not getting playing time because Curley is a better receiver right now, but I think Jets fans would rather see Ardarius Stewart get more playing time, and he's really been passed by Curley on the depth chart. And, you know, that there's a... You know, so the team is better right now, but I think there would be a more optimism if Curley was playing less and Ardarius Stewart was breaking out. But I think on the plus side on offense, Austin Tufair and Jenkins has looked really good, and that's been a big surprise on offense. And he is a free agent after the season, but he could be a guy that could turn into a very useful player for whoever he ends up with.
Yeah, certainly if you think about the Jets' goals for this year, if the goal was to come away with a top starting quarterback for 2018, that goal has not worked out well. The Jets had a 34.5% chance, according to the Football Power Index, of coming away with the first overall pick in the 2018 draft. That was twice any other team in the league. And now, after starting 3-2, with the Browns starting 0-5 and the Niners starting 0-5, the Jets have a 0.2% chance of coming away with the top pick in the draft, only a 33.8% chance of even coming in the top five. So it does seem like, in a way, even though they are better in the short term, like you said, they are sort of sacrificing the long term. I mean, is there, even if you assume they lose to the Patriots this week and they lose to the Falcons at home in 2 weeks, their other games are at Miami, hosting Buffalo, and at Tampa. You know, if they go 3-2 over the next 5 weeks and they hit that bye and they're 6-4, I mean, are you, would that excite you as a Jets fan? I mean, do you want this team to be competitive, even if it's unlikely that they make the playoffs, or is it more just?
I do, yeah, and I absolutely. First, I do not think they're going to go 3-2 over the next 5 weeks. So I would be excited. Yeah, that would be very good. I think that there's a few things to think about. One, the idea of being a terrible team that gets the first pick as a gateway to a Super Bowl seems more like a pipe dream than a real plan. So you don't want to be a terrible team that just happens to get a quarterback and then you're still going to be terrible everywhere else. So maybe a hypothetical universe where the team was great, but they lost a bunch of close games and lucked into the first pick and that first pick happened to be a great quarterback. Sure. But otherwise I'd rather you see the young players on the team develop. You can get a quarterback anywhere. You can always trade up. You can, you know, Deshaun Watson fell out of the top 10 this year and he looks to be pretty good so far. So it's not like you need that top pick. I think for Jets fans, if they can see a competent team, a good coaching job, the rookies and second-year players that Mike Maccagnan drafted playing well, then you can start to get excited about the team. And you know what? You can either draft a quarterback or find a quarterback in free agency and plug a hole on a good team. That, to me, is like a real plan. And if you look at the defense, let's assume that Leonard Williams and Mamu Wilkerson get better. And Coney Ealy has been a guy who, you know, revenge game for him this weekend.
It's true.
He's played very well so far. He had 4 deflections past the fence in the Jacksonville game, so I believe he had a fantastic game. He looks to be a really good addition. I think Jets fans have been pleasantly surprised with both Demario Davis and Darren Lee, so that gives you 2 linebackers who are young, athletic, and playing well. And you've got 2 young safeties who have been inconsistent, but still, they've both shown good signs in Jamal Adams and Marcus May. So, and Morris Claiborne's playing well. So now you've got the makings of a potentially really good defense. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. So I think that you want to see the team play well. You want to see the entire team be as good as they can. And, you know, the quarterback thing should be a fallback option. That way you seek out.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I mean, DeMario Davis last week had 4 knockdowns, presumably, I'm guessing, as a spy, maybe as a green dog in terms of quarterback knockdowns, which is pretty rare for an inside linebacker for a quarter of a season, let alone for one game.
It was, although it was, you know, a revenge game, so I don't know if we can count on that every week.
Do you think the Jets should perhaps farm out some of their players for short-term loans to create more revenge games later on during the season?
Revenge games seem to be the thing for the Jets right now, so I don't know. It's possible. And mm-hmm. and Josh McCown, I mean, we should talk about McCown. He has not played well, but mm-hmm. he's played well for Josh McCown. So that, there's a big difference between those two things. I talk about this with a lot of my Jets fans and my brother a lot. I mean, he's played well if you remember that you think he's going to play terribly. But he's still not playing well. He's not throwing downfield. He has a very high completion percentage, but it's all on short throws. So the offense is still not good. In his defense, it's not like the Jets had a bevy of weapons. So this is a team that I think is playing close to the ceiling on their talent. A guy who probably has not gotten much credit, but I think should, is John Morton. The offensive coordinator has done a really good job of getting the most out of what they have, right? I mean, that's all you can hope for in that situation. So this will be a big test for the Jets. In theory, the Patriots' pass defense is terrible. The defense in general is really bad. So this could be a game. It always sounds weird to say, right? Like, oh, they're playing the Patriots. The offense should do great. But but based on how the Patriots' defense has looked so far, I think you can say that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Patriots, who the defense has been pretty bad. 32nd in DVOA. Did look a little better against the Bucs on Thursday night last week, but they made some changes. They played a little more zone, from what I understand. They kind of simplified things a bit. And they got lucky in places. I mean, Nick Folk missed 3 field goals, which seems like, as a Jets fan, might make you happy to see Nick Folk struggle elsewhere. I can't speak for you. But some questions about their performance still. I mean, someone missed a touchdown, would have had a touchdown and either dropped it or was overthrown. I mean, there were plays to be had against the Patriots, and the Bucs were a little sloppy on offense. So do you think the Patriots defense we've seen over the first 5 weeks is the defense we're likely to see going forward until proven otherwise? Or is it just there were so many miscommunication issues and so many sort of missteps in the first 5 weeks, and there's sufficiently good coaching and sufficiently good talent that the Patriots are likely to sort of regress back towards the mean and be an average defense over the rest of the season?
It's really tough to say, because I think this is a big surprise. This is not something people expected. So it's not like you say, well, the Patriots are losing some players on defense, I'm not sure how they're going to be, and then you kind of have maybe a big variance in expectation, and then you see them play poorly, and they say, okay, well, I guess that's it. You know, most people thought the Patriots have a very good defense this year, and they still have the talent, they still have the coaching, it's just it's not showing up, and it's sort of week after week now. At first it was, all right, well, Alex Smith had a great game, and Drew Brees is Drew Brees, and then, well, I don't know about Deshaun Watson, but he had a great game, and I think the Panthers game is when I started thinking this is real, because Cam Newton had played really poorly all season, and then he had just a fantastic game. So I am sure at some point the Patriots are going to turn it around. They're not going to be 32nd in DVOA, but there is a big difference between being 10th in DVOA and 23rd. So even if they regress a little bit, they're going to need to regress to much closer to where people expect them to be if they're going to be a true Super Bowl contender that I think most people still view them as. So the offense has had more injuries, but it's still been outstanding. So it's really all the problems in New England right now are on one side of the ball.
So let me ask you, Chase, if you had to pick a side between Jets wins and Pats losses over the remainder of the season, which side of that action would you take?
I would probably take. Do I want the bigger number?
Yeah, you want more. So you want to either get, you know, if the Jets win 4 games and the Patriots lose 3 games, the Jets would win this bet.
I would probably take Jets wins.
Interesting.
Which doesn't feel like a lot, but
no.
I think I still think the Patriots, because look, you know, right now Tom Brady is still playing as well as he ever has, right? I mean,
sure.
he has been, over his last four games, he's had 1,435 yards, 11 touchdowns, and one interception, and he's got a passer rating of 121. So since that ugly game in week one, he's been outstanding. They have so much depth and talent at running back. So I would not worry about the offense at all. Mm. You know they're going to outcoach just about every team they face. So you would not be surprised. You know, this is still the team that most people thought had a chance to be 14-2, 15-1. So this will be a very interesting game because we'll get a real sense of where both of these teams are. If this game is close after three quarters, then I think that's going to be a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's not out of the question either. I mean, this could be a blowout. Patriots could have everything click. They could pick off Josh McCown four times, or, you know, the Jets could keep up. The defense could play a little better. You could get more of a pass rush against a Patriots offensive line that has definitely struggled at times this year. And, you know, it could be a competitive game. So I'll be intrigued to watch it more so than I think I would have expected heading into the season. Moving on, let's talk about Steelers Chiefs, which seems to be a pivotal game for the Steelers, surprisingly, given how they played last week against the Jaguars with Ben Roethlisberger throwing five interceptions. Let me start with this. Were we sort of as a, you know, as a football, what's the term? Basically, as football observers, were we overhyping the impact of all the skill position talent they had? I mean, this was, of course, going to be the year where it was going to be Le'Veon Bell on the field and Martavis Bryant on the field and Antonio Brown on the field. And with Ben Roethlisberger healthy, it kind of seemed like they were going to be just a truly dominant, unstoppable offense. And through five games, they've been not so great. I mean, they're 19th in points for, that includes I believe at least one specialty. Yeah, the block punt for a touchdown against the Browns in the opener. But just an offense that has not been up to snuff for a huge chunk of the season. Is there anything to attribute that to besides just us overestimating them, or is there something sort of hidden in their performance that makes you think they're going to improve, or is it just a small sample?
Well, I would say it's not my fault. I did not overestimate them. If they are playing poorly, it's on them, Bill.
Okay.
I expected them to play well because they have a history of doing it, and it's their fault. So I don't know. You're right. We expected this to be a really potentially outstanding offense because they finally had all the pieces that they've been kind of having 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 5 for a long stretch. Now they have everyone, and it's not just Roethlisberger. Le'Veon Bell's had a rough year. Mm-hmm. He did have one big game, but he has not looked the same either. He's also not really the same factor in the receiving game that he was. He had, yep. You know, even last week when he did have 10 catches, it was for 46 yards.
Yeah.
Last year he had 616 receiving yards in 12 games. So he was averaging over 50 yards a game receiving.
Yep.
And this year he's averaging 28 yards a game receiving. Yeah. So and as a runner, he also hasn't been the same. So Roethlisberger has absolutely been a big part of the issue, and it's still early. So I would say, similar to the Patriots defense, although I probably have more confidence in the Steelers offense, mm-hmm. I think there's a good chance this turns around. I would not count out Roethlisberger because of a rough stretch,
mm-hmm.
and he's got too much of a history of being successful. It's interesting because last year, you know, the Steelers, and that's why I'm excited about this game. Last year, the Steelers beat the Chiefs twice, and I don't think it's a situation where they have their number,
mm-hmm.
but it'll be, you know, if they are able to pull off an upset this weekend, they meet again in the playoffs. I think that then makes it a really interesting game where Chiefs fans are saying, "Is this a team we can beat?" I don't know.
Right.
And if you recall when the Steelers crushed the Chiefs last year in a pretty similar situation, mm-hmm. where they were coming off an absolutely terrible game against the Eagles, faced Kansas City and blew them out. So,
yeah, 29 points.
Yeah, and that was right after a 34-3 loss to Philadelphia. So mm-hmm. Pittsburgh has done this in stretches. I mean, if you've got a lot of Steelers fans, they can be pretty negative, especially when they face that. For a franchise that's won, 100 Super Bowls, they seem to be a pretty negative fan base. And you could see the loss to the Bears coming, the Jaguars loss even. They have a tendency to sometimes play down to the level of competition. I did have a trivia question for you on this one, though. Are you ready?
Well, let me actually say first in advance that the feelings about the Pittsburgh Steelers fan base are expressed by Chase Stewart and Chase Stewart and do not represent the views of Bill Barnwell, ESPN, the Walt Disney Company, et cetera, et cetera. No, fine, go ahead.
What is the who was the last quarterback before Ben Roethlisberger with zero touchdowns and five or more interceptions in a game?
In general? So any quarterback?
Zero touchdowns, five or more interceptions in a game.
That's a good question.
And I'll give you a hint. Yeah. It was against the Chiefs last year.
It was against the Chiefs last year?
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. It'll be a tough game for Roethlisberger, but it'll be an interesting...
I feel
opportunity
like
for him to redeem himself.
It wasn't Peyton Manning because it was last year.
It was last year. It was Ryan Fitzpatrick, zero touchdowns, six interceptions.
Oh,
but
right.
But the history of, believe it or not, you know, you see a game like, and the reason I gave you the trivia question, it's a little tricky because Fitzpatrick is obviously not very good, but you see game like Roethlisberger and you say, zero touchdowns, five interceptions, he must be terrible. Well, in the last 5 years, Eli Manning's done it, Drew Brees has done it, Matt Ryan's done it. So you do see really good quarterbacks have really bad games. It happens. I think Roethlisberger is an aggressive quarterback. He is a gunslinger. Sometimes things go off the rails. Mm-hmm. But my view, and especially, you know, I know there was a lot of discussion about his comments after the game, and I don't know your opinion. I kind of took that as a, I don't know if sarcasm is the right word, but I was getting a sense of him saying, you know what, if you want to doubt me, fine, watch me next week. Mm-hmm. kind of thing. And this will be a – it would not surprise me at all if Roethlisberger comes out and has a really good game. And we do see the Steelers' offense clicking despite facing a really good defense.
Yeah, it's certainly not out of the question. You mentioned good defenses, and I think what might be happening here as well in addition to the Steelers' offense is that we're probably not talking enough about the Steelers' defense, which has taken a leap forward this year. They're fifth in DVOA. They're second in points allowed per possession. Their performance has been kind of masked because they've, you know, had a bunch of turnovers on offense. There were two defensive touchdowns against them last week. Plus, in the Jaguars game, they allowed a 90-yard rushing touchdown in garbage time, you know, up, down multiple scores in the final few minutes of the game. So that counts, but I don't think it counts quite as much as perhaps it would have in a meaningful contest. I just think, you know, we think about how good the offense has been in years past for Pittsburgh. It doesn't have to be that good this year if this defense can keep it up. It just has to be better. If they can be pretty good, then suddenly you have a team that's deep and can really do everything. So I'm not as concerned about the Steelers, even though I think the offense is struggling, just because I think the offense will get better. And I do think that the defense is for real and a very solid unit.
Absolutely. I mean, I was looking at the numbers beforehand, and it actually had a – do a double check because it seemed a little off. Now, to take the other side of the case first, the quarterbacks Pittsburgh has played this year is DeShone Kizer, Case Keenum before he turned into Tom Brady, Mike Glennon, Joe Flacco, and Blake Bortles. So not exactly the toughest of lineups, but the Steelers rank first in yards per pass attempt allowed this year. So the pass defense has been really, really strong. And even going back into last season, they had a string of long, you know, basically all of November and December, and so far this year, their pass defense has played well. And again, there's been some mediocre to worse quarterbacks that they face, but you're right. That is a underreported story, that this could be a defense that finishes the year as a top five, at least pass defense, and that gives them the chance to be a team streaking into January that's a real playoff contender.
Yeah. Well, in terms of playoff contenders, the Chiefs are obviously, in many ways, the favorites to win the Super Bowl at the moment. I think every quantitative model, given their performance at the beginning of the year, given how big of an advantage they have them as the heavy favorites at this point to finish as the top seed in the AFC and win the Super Bowl. And of course, you know, as fans, I think there is this perception that, oh, well, it's just the Chiefs, and we know they're going to blow it in January because that's what they do, that's what Andy Reid does. And I don't think that's fair, but let me ask you, how long did the Chiefs have to keep up this level of play, and especially this level of offense and this style of offense, before you trust that this is what they're going to be like for the rest of this season and into the playoffs?
Well, I think it's not fair to make that comment of it's the Chiefs, they're going to blow it. I'm with you on that. This is still a different team. We're seeing Now, I think one thing you have to keep in mind is Travis Kelce needs to be healthy.
Sure.
He is a significant game changer. He did have a concussion. He may not play this weekend. But if he's healthy, him and Tyreek Hill are two players that are really tough to handle. I mean, those are unique talents that I don't think any team is comfortable guarding either right. of them. So when you put both of them on the field, that makes things tough. And then we're not talking about Kareem Hunt, who's been, you know, in the conversation for best player in the league. So this right. is a the Chiefs of 2 years ago didn't have Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt. And even the Chiefs of last year, they didn't have Hunt, and Hill was not, you know, he's still a rookie. So they are getting, they have surrounded the Alex Smith with all the talent he needs. And mm-hmm. Smith is playing really well. I mean, we do have to give him credit. It's not a situation where I'd say he's as good as his numbers suggest, because his numbers suggest he's, you know, playing like one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time right now. But he's still just 33 years old. Quarterbacks do get better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not unusual to see a quarterback get better as he gets older. It's not the norm, but it happens. And
sure.
He also seems to be passing the eye test, at least for me. He looks in complete control of this offense. And I think it's easy to forget that there, and again, it's so different quarterback to quarterback, but some quarterbacks, they really do need to get comfortable in the system and know, have complete command of it before they can really take over. And some quarterbacks are good at being good right away. Alex Smith was not, but he is perfectly aligned with this offense now. Mm-hmm. And I don't see a reason to think that they're not going to be, if those players stay healthy, if they have Smith, Hill, Kelce, and Hunt in January, mm-hmm. I don't think there's a reason to doubt them. But, of course, you know, any franchise is going to say they're going to have their share of snake-bitten fans and have doubts, but they deserve to be considered the best team in the league right now.
That's my concern are the injuries. When you think about the problem with this team, where I don't think the talent level is lacking by any means, but if you look at their injury list, it's Mitch Morris has been out for most of the season. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is questionable to play on Sunday after missing last week. Parker Ehringer hasn't really played for most of the year. That's three starting interior offensive linemen. They lost Chris Conley to a ruptured Achilles. Albert Wilson, who would take his place, is questionable to play this week with a knee injury. And that's just the offense. On the flip side, you have Eric Berry, who's out for the year. Tamba Ali's on the physically unable to perform list. Justin Houston is questionable to play on Sunday. Dee Ford has been held out of the past two games, and he should return on Sunday, but we don't know. Benny Logan is questionable with a knee injury. And then Kelce, you mentioned, who has a concussion, and he's going through the protocol right now. I mean, there's so many concerns with this team staying healthy. And I think Andy Reid's an excellent coach. I think that they do a great job of bringing young players along. I think that they've been able to fade some injuries in the past. But it does figure, you know, you'd think at some point this is going to add up, where the injuries are going to be too much to bear for this team. And it's not going to sink them, but it's going to limit their ceiling, I think, to some extent, given how well they've played so far this season. But I mean, certainly.
No, that's a great point. I agree that there are too many names. You went on there for about a minute, which is about 40 seconds too long, given that it's October 12th.
Yeah.
So I think if I'm looking at the biggest term for Chiefs, you still want to keep those core players healthy, but on defense they've lost a lot, and the defense hasn't been that good. Mm-hmm. So it is already impacting them on defense. But they've built a very good and deep team, but they can't keep losing players. And even if they don't have all those players back in January, it's still going to be a question. It is interesting, though, that, you know, John Dorsey really developed a heck of a team when everybody's healthy, and he may not get too much credit for it at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, there'll be opportunities for general managers this offseason, a few guys I can think of who are probably going to be on the hot seat, who teams might be going after. We're going to get on the hot seat if we don't go to a break, but we'll come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. First, guys, I know that it's been a tough fantasy football season for a lot of people. As someone who drafted Julian Edelman, drafted Tyler Eifert, had a particular interest in Corey Coleman, maybe had some feelings about Spencer Ware on his fantasy football team, it's been rough for me too. And when repairing the relationships you've strained due to your fantasy football obsession, you need quality gift options. If you spent the first 6 weeks of the year yelling at certain players for not scoring touchdowns, if you were a David Johnson owner and you get upset every time you watch the Cardinals play, you may need to repair, or at the very least, maintain some of your personal relationships. And one way you can do that and help out the show in the process is to buy gorgeous red or assorted roses from 1-800-Flowers.com for the same amazing price. Because right now, When you order a dozen red or assorted roses for $29.99, 1-800-Flowers will give you a dozen more roses plus a vase. Absolutely free. So, you know, if you get a dozen roses and then you're sitting there thinking, where am I going to put these roses? You want to put them in a souvenir cup from a football stadium? That's not going to go over that well. It's not going to look good, guys. You can get a vase and 24 roses from 1-800-Flowers.com. That's 50% off the original price. It'll leave your loved ones stunned without spending a fortune. These gorgeous roses from 1-800-Flowers are picked at their peak and shipped overnight to ensure freshness. So one dozen red or assorted roses for only $29.99, plus another dozen in vase for free, that's an unreal deal. And even better, you can do that right now by going to 1-800-Flowers.com, clicking the radio icon, and entering my code, which is Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. That's 1-800-Flowers.com, code Barnwell, to get your 24 roses and your vase for $29.99 today. All right, welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined by Chase Stewart of FootballPerspective.com. We're previewing Week 6 of the NFL season. Let's get to a team that Andy Reid, I believe, once coached for, the Green Bay Packers, who are playing the Minnesota Vikings this weekend. And, well, you looked at what they did against the Cowboys last weekend. Obviously, a really fun, exciting game. Let me ask you this, Chase. Is Aaron Rodgers your MVP through five games?
He probably isn't my MVP through five games just because Alex Smith's been so good. Mm-hmm. But he may be the best candidate for MVP over the rest of the season because he just looked outstanding. He's in such control of just about everything out there. And it seems to be irrelevant how many players are injured on Green mm-hmm. Bay. I don't know how, but Aaron Rodgers is kind of breaking football in that regard. So it's remarkable, and the Packers are probably not the most talented team in the league, and if you looked at every team without their quarterback, I'm not sure how great we would think the current iteration of Green Bay is. Mm-hmm. But with Rodgers, he's you know, this is why having a Hall of Fame quarterback in his prime is such a huge advantage.
It is. Turns out having an incredible quarterback is good for your football team. But like you said, injuries have been a huge concern. I mean, the Packers were down Ty Montgomery last week. They have had stretches without Randall Cobb, without Jordy Nelson, with Devontae Adams for stretches of time in games. Their offensive line has been a mess. Of course, they were down their top five tackles at one point. But it does seem like things are coming together. I mean, this could be the first weekend, I believe, all season that they're going to have Brian Bulaga and David Bakhtiari back at tackle, which would be a huge improvement for their offensive line because there's so many guys who are being played out of position, who are being stretched into roles they're not that good at necessarily. Montgomery, it looks like we'll probably be ready to come back, but it also does seem like Aaron Jones looks like he's going to be a viable running back. So, like you said, it does seem like they can really just overcome a lot of injury concerns just because Aaron Rodgers is so good. Let me ask you this, though, when it comes to Jones, do you think it's easier to win a meaningful part of a job, which it seems like Aaron Jones has done, with one good game at running back than it is perhaps at other positions?
You know, it's funny, because I was thinking about Jones, too. He was the guy I wanted to talk about on Green Bay, and I don't know if it's easier, but I think you can stand out. What seems to me is it's easier to find that guy, right? So, yeah. I mean, Jones was, I'm sure most NFL fans had not heard of him. He was a rookie. He is a rookie. He was drafted in the fifth round this year. I had to remember he had a huge game. He had 301 rushing yards and four touchdowns in his last college game, but he played at UTEP. People were not watching him. He was not heavily hyped. Right. Fifth-round pick, and now all of a sudden he seems to be an above-average starting running back, and it kind of goes back to why people like you and I are writing articles every year that you shouldn't spend a high pick on a running back or spend a lot mm-hmm. of free agent money on running backs, because you can find a rookie fifth-round pick who may now be a starter and is playing well. So he looked great, I think, against the Cowboys, and Rodgers was also audible and running him in favorable situations. I think he does a good job of helping him out. Mm-hmm. And if I was, you know, I think the Packers don't need to find a guy. There's no need, once Montgomery is healthy, not to have a true committee. And mm-hmm. Montgomery's been, an impressive runner, better than I would have expected. He's handled the going back and forth across positions well, and he seems to be a good fit at running back. So if the Packers going into the second half of the year have both of those guys healthy mm-hmm. and an offensive line that's healthy, they'll have more balance, and they won't need to rely on Rodgers the way they have so far.
Do you buy the arguments you hear from announcers and some coaches and backs at some point that you have to get a running back into a rhythm and that the committee kind of prevents running backs from getting into that rhythm? Is there any evidence of that? Is there any sort of, you know?
I don't buy that. I mean, I hadn't really heard that in a while, but I guess it wouldn't surprise me if that's what announcers are saying these days. Teams have had committees for most of football history. It was certainly the norm up until the mid-'80s, and even now we're still seeing a lot of teams have that and have success with it. The Panthers had 2,000-yard rushers not too long ago, and we've seen a lot of teams make the playoffs, win the Super Bowl with committees at running back. So I think having one guy only is helpful if that guy is really, really good. Having the ability to rotate fresh players and different skill sets is a key part of it. So I think the rhythm thing is pretty overrated. Maybe it's former NFL running backs that are saying that in the broadcast booth. I don't know.
Certainly seems plausible, and you never hear it about quarterbacks. You never hear, "Oh, we have to throw 50 times so I can get into a rhythm throwing the football." I have to admit, I'm pretty skeptical of it as well, but I trust that you're someone who has actually done research on it as opposed to me, where I just think about it for a second and I'm like, "Eh, I don't buy it," and then move on with my life.
I have to do research, Bill, so you can just think and get the answer.
Yeah, I just think about it and I have a correct opinion every single time. It's never gone wrong for me before.
That is the way to go.
So in terms of the Vikings in this game, it does seem like Sam Bradford is probably not going to play. He has not been practicing for this week, I believe, after the short week on Monday night. It does seem like he is not 100%, that he re-aggravated his knee injury, which is, to this point, I believe, undiagnosed in terms of what it actually is. And Case Keenum honestly outplayed him on Monday night. I did feel like he was the better quarterback, and even though I think Bradford's probably better when the two of them are both healthy, it does seem like it's not an enormous difference. How does this knee injury, you think, impact Bradford's future, given that he's a free agent to be after the season?
Well, I think it's too early to say, right? So we've got to see if he plays, if he returns, which I guess he will at some point, and plays well the rest of the year, then I don't think the knee injury would be as big of a deal. I mean, there's always going to be a question as to, can you sign this guy to a big contract and hope he'll, you know, how confident are they to stay healthy? But if he doesn't get hurt again, I think there's such a demand for quarterbacks that if you're a team that needs a quarterback and you just finished the season watching terrible quarterback play, you're going to convince yourself that Bradford is the guy to go. But, you know, right now, it'll be interesting to see whether or not Keenum can keep up that level of play. I don't think we know who's going to play this weekend. Keenum has looked pretty good. Bradford has looked pretty good, too. So when healthy, Bradford's certainly got more upside, got the better tools. I don't know how far Minnesota can really go with Case Keenum, thinking through, without Dalvin Cook, what is the upside on this offense? It's probably not that high. So for Vikings fans, they're probably going to be hoping that Bradford can get healthy quickly.
How many games do you think the Packers offense and the Vikings defense would win if they were together against an average schedule, average injury luck, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, the Vikings defense, they've done a great job building it over the years, and they've got a lot of talent. So it would probably be, I'd go 13-3.
13-3,
yeah. Is that about good to you? Who's coaching it?
That's a good question. Do you merge Mike McCarthy and Mike Zimmer?
What could go wrong with that? my Vikings, so I was thinking, you know, if for the Vikings to win this division, this is a huge game for them. They're going to need to win this game. Although they have won the division a couple times recently, or not recently, but in the last couple decades when they did lose at home to Green Bay. But here's my Vikings-related trivia question for you. Who was the last Vikings quarterback to win the division that the Vikings play in twice while as a member of the Vikings?
Oh, boy. So it wasn't Christian Ponder.
I like bringing the trivia to the Bill Barnwell podcast.
It makes me look bad, though. It makes people realize I don't ever watch football.
I would not have gotten this one correctly because the answer is Fran Tarkenton. That's how long the Vikings have really struggled. You know, they have won the division that many times, but they won it with Teddy Bridgewater in 2015. They won it with Favre in 2009, Gus Frerotte in 2008, Dante Culpepper in 2000.
Didn't they win it?
Cunningham, of course, in 98.
Didn't they win it with Ponder, too?
I think Ponder, they did not, the 2012 year with Peterson, they did not win the division.
Is that true?
Yeah, the Packers won 11-5.
Didn't they beat them in week 16, in week 17 to win the division?
I believe they did to make the, yeah, that was the game Peterson had the big, he crossed the threshold, but then they lost the next week in Green Bay because the Packers did win the division, yeah.
Goes to show what I know. I don't even remember.
I always say that you overrate Christian Ponder, and now we have audio proof.
I mean, he completed 62% of his passes. I don't see what the problem is. That's a franchise quarterback right there.
But you have to feel bad for Vikings fans. This is a team that's really struggled to find a quarterback for a really long time, and you thought maybe it was with Bridgewater, and now who knows, and then maybe Bradford, and now who knows too. So it's a tough situation. I think Minnesota has played pretty well this year, though, so that they have not been disappointing, but the long-term upside is still, I think, a big question mark.
So, I mean, they've had what? In terms of long-term viable quarterbacks for more than four seasons, it's been Culpepper, and before him, Tommy Kramer, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, there's not, four is a long time in Minnesota Vikings world.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you have to check, I think the Packers have had not that many quarterbacks. I don't know, you'd have to look.
It's hard to tell when it comes to the Packers. No one really ever talks about them, so you don't really
people forget
about
that.
Quarterbacks. People forget that is true. Let's finish up. Let's talk about Lions Saints, a team that I'm intrigued to hear what you think about them, because I feel like I don't know what to make of them in some ways. The Lions, it's weird because, you know, there are sometimes I watch them where I think, wow, this is a really good team, and their defense is much improved. Their offense is really capable of moving the ball on just about anyone when they want to. They're never really out of game just because Matthew Stafford is so great in the fourth quarter. But you saw last week, the Lions, they're really subject to what they can do in terms of takeaways. The first 4 weeks of the year, they had 11 takeaways. Defense looked very solid for most of that. And then week five, unfortunately, no takeaways. They did shut down the running game. They held the Panthers to 28 yards and 28 carries. That helped them in the fourth quarter during their comeback, but Cam Newton had a really impressive performance. He was 26 of 33 for 355, three touchdowns, no picks. So is that, in terms of that sort of style of defense where you're going to be really dependent upon turnovers, is that viable in terms of building a defense for the long term, or at least for a full season? Or is it just, you know, you kind of want to be...
I think it's only viable if you have a really... So the obvious answer is no, right?
Okay.
I think it can be more viable if you have a really good passing attack that can take a lead, or kind of like what the Colts were doing during the Peyton Manning era, where you have fast players on defense that maybe are not great against the run, but know how to play with a lead and can be opportunistic.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can build the defense around that. And if the Lions, and kind of like the Saints 2009 season when they won the Super Bowl, that was a really opportunistic defense that was really compatible with the offense. And so you had a team that was a true team because the defense knew how to play with a lead and they could be very aggressive. But right now, and especially I think the Haloti Ngata injury is going to hurt the Lions. He's now after the year. They're not going to be a great defense, and so they are going to have to rely on turnovers. And it's going to be tough when the offense has been pretty inconsistent. I mean, they have not had a running game of note for a while, and that is still true this year.
Yeah,
so it really is all on Matt Stafford.
Have they had a successful run-first running back since, God, who would even be James Stewart?
Yeah, I mean it's been a while. So that you lead me right into my the last trivia question
Kevin
of the
Jones.
Show, which is where do Matt Stafford and Drew Brees rank career passing yards per game?
I feel like it's not a random number. It's not going to be like 17 and 31 because that would be a really tough trivia question. I'm going to say 3 and 5.
1 and 2.
1 and 2. That's probably what I should have inferred from the question, but I decided to be a little trickier.
Yeah, they are the two quarterbacks that have passed for more yards per game than anybody else in the league, and it makes sense, or in league history, I should say. It makes sense because, I mean, we're obviously playing in a pass-friendly era, but Stafford and Brees have always had to win games on their arms, and the Lions have been a little less pass-happy in recent years, and I think some of that's been the defense being better, but they are putting it all on Stafford, and especially under this, you know, I think the offense in the last, and you've written about this, the last couple of years has turned into a more conservative passing attack, and that puts even more pressure on Stafford, though. I mean, he has to win the game, and he's played well, but he's not scoring at the level that you would hope for a Lions fan. So that's been their biggest issue. He can play well, but they're not putting up 27 points a game.
Mm-hmm. What I find interesting, and I wonder if you think there's a reason for this, you think about the guys who have the biggest arms in all of football. I would say number one and number two, if I pulled 100 people around the league, would probably say Matthew Stafford and Joe Flacco. Simultaneously, those guys run two of the most conservative schemes in terms of throwing downfield in all of football. Do you think there's a reason why that's the case? I mean, it just seems like it's, you know, even though I think Stafford is effective at it, I don't think Flacco's been very good, but it does seem so strange that you have these guys with incredibly strong arms, and that's what they're drafted for, what their pedigree is, and then they're running these sort of very conservative, you know, 5 and 6 yard throws over and over again.
So I think they are different situations, and certainly last year there was some overlap in that. Last year in particular, the Ravens really were struggling to find a good running back, and the Lions have had that forever. So if you've got maybe take a step back and say, big picture, a really good quarterback, which I'm not sure if Joe Flacco is anymore, you would want him to throw a lot. And so for the Lions and the Ravens at times, the short passing game has just replaced the running game. And so it kind of makes sense that even though Stafford has a huge arm, he's throwing all these short passes because he's throwing medium passes and he's throwing short passes instead of handing the ball off. But I do think the teams are not as aggressive as they should be, and the Lions are a good example of that in terms of attacking downfield and using Stafford's arm. So now one, you know, interesting piece of that would be if Kenny, I think Kenny Galladay is back this week. He had a great week one. If there is a deep threat on the team, that could change things. Golden Tate is not that. And you know, Eric Ebron maybe was drafted to be that. He's not turned into that. He's having a very bad year. So some of it's a weapons situation for Detroit, but you're absolutely right. I mean, what's the point of having a guy with Stafford's arm and just not taking a couple of chances, you know, maybe three a game? There's no reason not to, and I think that the Lions would be better off if they were attacked more aggressively downfield while still throwing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. On the flip side, though, they may not want to do that because the Saints' defense has come to life. They held a Panthers offense that's been really impressive ever since to 13 points. And then, granted, not as hard to shut out the Dolphins, but they did that. How many games would the Saints have to play above-average defense, given their years of horrible play, before you actually believe they were a genuinely good defense?
Probably like 100. I'm not going to buy it, though.
100, you say?
I can't. I mean, and it's funny because I had a couple of, I think I wrote an article, I know I had a few tweets about how bad the Saints defense was after two games. Because I came up with a metric, and after 2 weeks in the entire NFL, all 60 games or whatever it was, the two best passing performances of the season both came against the Saints. And since then, they've looked pretty good. So I'm not sure. I think there's a... I'd be very hesitant before buying into the Saints offense or Saints defense. And it's not like, at least to me, I don't get the sense that there's two or three breakout stars that are driving this and have turning the Saints into a great defensive unit. They just seem to be playing a little bit better. Maybe the competition went down a little bit. But they get the Lions and the Packers in the next 2 weeks. That should answer the question. We don't have to wait 100 games is the good news.
That's fair. I mean, they still haven't turned the ball over once on offense this year, which is pretty incredible. So they're not putting their defense in a lot of bad situations, which helps matters certainly. And they didn't force any turnovers the first 2 weeks of the year, but they forced three against the Panthers and then one against Miami in London. Let me finish up with this, and I want to know if you've written about this, because I think I probably want to write about it if you haven't written about it. Has there ever been a quarterback in modern football history who has had a worse set of defenses to work with during his career than Drew Brees has in New Orleans?
I think I have written about that. And if Brees is a guy that stands out, in recent history, though, yeah, I don't think there's a guy who's even that close. So the Lions had some really bad defenses for a while, and that's why Stafford was doing so much, but that sort of changed. So, and Phillip Rivers is another guy who's, had some bad luck on his defenses and bad luck just about everywhere. But no, you know, and that's the reason why, this is why you're a professional, Bill. Segue back to the trivia question. Drew Brees is the highest average passing yards per game in NFL history. He's had to throw year after year because the Saints defense is just not giving him much support. And he is somehow still an underrated player because the fact that he has not had an interception this year, it's like people don't even think about that. Brees has great game after great game, and we don't even – doesn't register because we're just so used to it by now.
It does seem like it's the case. Now, when I was writing my quarter season awards, I looked at the numbers, and I'm like, wow, you know, Drew Brees is a very viable MVP candidate, but we just sort of take it for granted. Like, oh, yeah, he's going to be great, even though he's, you know, completing 69% of his passes, averaging 7.5 yards per attempt, 8 touchdowns, no picks, sacked 4 times in 4 games, even though he's missing both of his starting tackles. I mean, he's so valuable and so good at this.
And remember, they traded Brandon Cooks in the offseason. It's not like this is a team that's got a ton of weapons on offense. So he's not even, other than Michael Thomas, it's not like you've got a guy there that's so great. If you look at the targets on the Saints, Thomas is 37. Rookie Alvin Kamara, who's been very good, but running back, is second with 28. Mark Ingram is third with 22. And then Ted Ginn and Kobe Fleener are next. So how many quarterbacks would be able to take rookie running back Mark Ingram, Ted Ginn, Kobe Fleener, and Michael Thomas and play like an MVP candidate?
Yeah, I mean, not only down Brandon Cooks who they traded, but Willie Snead's missed the entire season so far with a suspension and injury. So they're going to get him back, it looks like, for Sunday, which could be another weapon against a Lions pass defense that is certainly, at the very least, inconsistent. Do you have a winner for this game, Chase? Do you want to pick a winner for... Actually, let's pick a winner for all 4 games. We'll finish up there.
So should we go with the Jets or the Patriots? I think I'm going to go with the Patriots in an upset.
Okay.
They're going to do it.
They're only 9.5-point favorites.
They are only 9.5-point favorites. I will take the Chiefs. I'm going to continue to buy into them. Mm-hmm. One of the tougher games left in the schedule, but I'm not going to doubt them just yet. Hard to bet against the Packers right now, so I will go with Green Bay.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to take the Lions because I'm looking to get some hate mail from Saints fans.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pick the Patriots. I'm not going to go with the Jets. Reverse jinx, obviously, there. But I'm going to go the opposite side for all 3 of the other games. I'm going to go Steelers, I'll go Vikings, and I'll go Saints.
So why Vikings? Give me the thought process.
I think the Vikings are good. I think the defense is very solid. I think they're going to give Aaron Rodgers some trouble. They're at home, which helps a fair amount. The Packers are 3-point favorites. I do think they're going to be effective moving the football. If Stephon Diggs is healthy, I think that'll obviously help. The Packers are going to be, it looks like, without Kenny King, who has a concussion. I think their tackles, even if they play, they're not 100%. The Vikings could give them a lot of trouble with their pass pressure. And I just
think...
Is this
a pick contingent on the starting quarterback or no?
No, I'm assuming Case Keenum's going to play.
Okay.
If they play Bradford and he's injured, then yeah, I'll change my mind. But I do think that Keenum's going to be the starter, and I think it'll be okay. I could be wrong. I'm wrong plenty of times. I don't know how to pick games to save my life, but I do think that the Vikings have a better chance, perhaps, than
and
it
going
seems.
With the Saints.
Yeah, I do. I'm going to go with the Saints at home. I think it'll be a shootout for sure. The Saints are 4.5-point favorites. That's not really crazy.
No. I want to see if you can defend your pick on the fly.
I feel like you're attacking me, and I need to go into my safe space before this podcast gets out of hand. But Chase Stewart, thank you so much. Where can people check out more of what you are working on when it comes to football on the internet?
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun chatting with you. You can follow me on Twitter, FBGChase, and at my site, footballperspective.com.
Tremendous. Chase, thank you so much. I'll have you back on later on in the season to break down the Jets' playoff chances.
Can't wait.
Thanks, Chase. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. That's it for me this week. We're coming back next week. A couple more episodes of the Bill Barnwell Show and, of course, the Nickel Package coming out on Wednesday. But thanks so much for listening, and more Bill Barnwell Show coming next week.